I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Welcome to a new episode of the Cinema Stories Podcast. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. This summer, I've been doing this special podcast event series because we're waiting for indoor movie theaters to return and for us to return to them to experience movies on the big screen. And I've been bringing on film critic colleagues and friends in the industry to share favorite indoor movie theater experiences and our thoughts on what's happening right now and what the movie going experience could be like in the near future. What's going to happen when we return to them? My guest on this episode of Cinema Stories, one of my favorite guys, Critics Choice Association member, film critic for WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM in New York City. He hosts Night Shift there, Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern, and Real World, Fridays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. We also co-host the weekly Too Fast, Two Films podcast, which you can hear at TooFastTwoFilms.com, on Twitter and Instagram at Mike on Screen. It is Mike Sargent. What is going on, Mike?
Jackson Murphy, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for being on this episode. It's the final episode of the Cinema Stories podcast, but I'm so glad to have you on to talk about all things movie theaters. It has been 4 months since either of us have been in an indoor movie theater seeing something on the big screen. How you feeling after 4 months of this?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I never really liked streaming so much and getting screeners and links because I'd much rather see it on the big screen or send me a DVD or something so that I could watch it on my big screen, because a lot of times I'd have to download it and then burn it to DVD. So I really miss the theater experience. And I'll tell you what's amplified for me. The thing you miss, and maybe you not as much as me, and only because of your setup there, is I miss seeing a movie with the intended audience. There's nothing better. You know, like, even if it's a movie you're not into, but if you see a movie with like a horror movie audience or a Star Wars audience, and they're like so into it, you're into it, you're enjoying it. But then with critics, you know, critics are a little more like, okay, arms folded, you know, this better be good. Okay. So I miss that, being a film critic. But then you really miss it when you're watching some of these films that we've been watching and there's no audience. You know, you might have family, but, you know, one mom, one dad, one friend is not the same as like 150 people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been to a lot of those, whether it's the Avengers movies or Star Wars. Everybody gets there, you know, an hour early at least. They're cheering a little bit, especially during the last Avengers movie, Endgame. They're cheering or they're crying at certain moments. You do feel that energy. You may not agree with how they're feeling based
exactly
on how you feel about the movie, but you're definitely feeling that. Absolutely. I miss that. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting too, because I've gone to, you know, promo screenings, you know, sometimes like that's the only promo screening they have a critics row and that's where you go. But sometimes you can see, you get a preview of how well a film's going to do based on the audience reaction, irregardless of what you think of it. Sometimes gauging how the audience, you're like, wow, this seems like crap to me, but these people are eating it up. Or you know, like, wow, this is great. Why are the audience laughing? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely feel that too. Sometimes you go to a movie and then you realize, oh yeah, this is actually going to make a lot of money potentially, or the word of mouth is going to help with this. Word of mouth now is, if you're watching a movie on Netflix or VOD or something, it is texting and tweeting to your friends, hey, pay the $5.99 or the $19.99 and go ahead and watch this, as opposed to having a conversation with somebody after the movie and then things like that. It's a different way of doing the word of mouth over these past 4 months.
Well, it is, but you know, again, I feel it's amplified. I think word of mouth had changed, you know, with the rise of social media, you know, or social media, you know, 5 years ago isn't what it is today, you know, especially just in terms of portability. You have it on your phone. Like, you could be, you know, people can recommend things or acknowledge things or ask. I'm sure as a film critic, you get asked by friends, hey, I was thinking of going to see this or this. Should I see that? You know?
Yep.
But now nobody has to call you. They could be standing online or about to buy the ticket. And this starts at 7:40. That start. Wait, should I wait? You know? So I just think that it's been amplified, especially now. Now it's like, okay, I have a bazillion options. Do I get hooked on this show or do I get hooked on this show?
And we're here to help you. You know, we've been doing that.
Exactly.
And we've been doing the Too Fast, Two Films podcast for the last 6 months. We started January 17th. Had no idea that 2 months in, we would just be changing the course of which movies we'd be reviewing and how we'd be reviewing them as far as they're ones you can all watch at home, every single one of them. Did not expect that going in, but I'm so glad that we've been able to help everybody choose which ones to see and which ones to skip over these last 6 months.
Well, it's weird not having to speak to you very quickly, and we're done. it is weird, and you know, it's interesting you say that too, because in many ways now it's kind of leveled the playing field. Like, whatever it is, however big it is, you have to wait online. You can go see it. You know something was going to be playing that you know was going to be huge, was going to be sold out. That's not an issue.
I think this whole thing has helped the little movies that, I mean, you're in New York City, so you get the chance to see smaller movies because a lot of times they go there first when they came to indoor movie theaters. Now a lot of these smaller movies that would have just been in New York and LA and smaller and other places around the country, but not necessarily somewhere like upstate New York all the time, you know, everybody gets the chance to see it equally through paying for it on your TV or on a streaming service. And I think it has benefited a lot of these smaller movies. Actually, they get more of a chance to be seen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's benefited. The one thing I think it's really benefited having this time off is, and again, it's amplified because they were already on the rise, but documentaries.
Yes. Yes.
I think, you know, you can only take but so much narrative, whatever. You can only get caught up in so many movies or films or whatever. But sometimes, you know, you want, you know, and I think documentaries have exploded over the last couple of years, you know, because, you know, of course, part of it is we all need content. But I think also part of it is because of how biased news has become. Documentaries have kind of become the last place to really get balanced reporting. If you watch something on, let's say, a quote unquote right wing network, how they cover something, you're going to get it one way. If you cover it on the quote unquote left, and so they both leave stuff out. You have to kind of watch both to go, okay. With a documentary, ideally a good documentary anyway, you really can deep dive and see both sides, and there's a lot more objectivity.
Yes, there have been several fascinating documentaries over the last several years, whether it's My Darling Vivian, which we just reviewed recently on Too Fast, Two Films about Johnny Cash's first wife, or the one that stunned me. I walked out of the theater. I was in New York City. I walked out and was just like, where am I?
I know which one you're going to say. Go ahead.
I'm going to say, well, take a guess. Which one am I going to say, Mike?
No. I want to hear.
You want to hear? Okay.
Okay.
Blackfish.
Ah, okay. That's not what I was going to guess. Okay.
What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say the one about the twins, the triplets.
Oh, that was good. I didn't catch that till closer to the Documentary Awards that year on DVD, Three Identical Strangers. Black, but that is a really good film as well. Three Identical Strangers is very good. No, Blackfish stunned me because, I mean, it presents both sides, but also the one side was just like, it pounds you and pounds you and pounds you about why everything is wrong at SeaWorld. And I was just like, wow, I have never seen a documentary like this before.
Seeing a documentary in a theater is a very specific experience too. You know, especially one of the best I have, you know, as you were talking about this, I started to remember, like, you know, okay, movie theater experiences, you know, and there have been some that it was just that moment. Then there were some where it was the whole film, but there's nothing like, and if we get to it, I'll share one with you, but there's nothing like sitting and like everybody gasps because of something, you know, or everybody's feeling something because of something they just saw on screen, you know?
Yeah. All right. That's a little tease. We'll get to that in a second here on Cinema Stories. The other thing I want to ask you about when it comes to us watching movies now at home and as members of the press is, you know, at first I was like, are we going to have to pay $19.99 every time we watch one of these movies, or are the studios going to be nice enough to send us some of these VOD ones early for free and allow us to review them early? Because sometimes we get the links, but sometimes for the big movies, you know, we got to see them in theaters. So I was pleasantly surprised that the studios kind of all jumped on board and said, we want you to be able to review these movies early.
Well, you know, it kind of makes sense because here's what else was happening. I think, like you said, these small movies and these smaller platforms were starting to trend. They were starting to get a lot of traction. They were starting to get, you know, people were a little tired of, of Netflix. They'd already watched Netflix. They had to, you know, they were looking for something else. They maybe didn't even want to jump in because some new series and you're going to get CBS or whatever. But I think that the studios realize, you know, because there were a lot of articles at the beginning of the year when this first happened, how all these streaming outlets and all these smaller films are benefiting. And the studios realized they could get lost in the mix if they're waiting to release stuff, you know. And I think Trolls was the beginning of that. Event streaming, you know, we're in a time where we'd be seeing all the summer blockbusters. This is a huge time for the movies.
Yeah.
For us to be all not, for movie theaters to be shuttered, and, you know, we're not seeing being bombarded with ads for Fast and the Furious 25. They're in wheelchairs, you know, whatever it is. It's leveled the playing field. So I see that the studios really had to kind of, you know, they had to be a little more open. And from my position, I also think the whole notion of a lack of inclusivity overall is beginning to, like, oh, you know, you're, you know, there's a lot of smaller outlets that were covered by people of color that couldn't get in. And so this is all kind of coming together. Rotten Tomatoes increased their membership and the Academy increased their membership.
Yes.
And even there's been initiatives within the Critics' Choice to reach out to more diverse critics. So I think that the idea of leveling the playing field, making things more open, I think it's changing, and it's changed things. So I think that's a factor. What do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, so much has been happening over the last 4 months. You know, some people have been asking me, what have you been doing with movie theaters closed? And I'm like, there's so many movies on these streaming platforms that deserve people's attention. So many voices that deserve to be heard, and also so much news happening every single day that there's still so much to keep track of and to keep our interest for people who are in the world of movies and TV and entertainment, and a lot of it for the better, a lot of it positive news, whether it's a movie coming or new voices being amplified.
Well, yeah, new voices being amplified, but, you know, the two sides to that for me, because you know, I review for different outlets, but my main outlet is WBAI, and public WBAI is public radio. And, you know, as both a filmmaker myself, but also someone who, you know, I'm on a station where part of it is about the community and amplifying, as you said, voices. So I always made sure I had a mix of smaller films and bigger films. Because, you know, for me, you know, especially, you know, whether my show is a half hour or an hour, I have time, you know, unlike Too Fast to Films, to cover more stuff, just like you get to cover on your other shows. There's so much out there.
Yeah.
This stuff I can't do. I literally, I would have said I was going to see between 4 to 6 films a week before. Okay, now, easily, any given week, because, again, everybody can send you a link, they don't have to worry about trying to get you to a screening, there are at least a dozen films every week I could be watching or reviewing.
Yeah.
Are you in the same place?
I am. I keep getting emails all the time.
Yes. Like, and all of a sudden people are discovering you too.
Yeah. And television shows too. But when it comes to the movies, yes, documentaries or even smaller animated movies, I've noticed, I write for animationscoop.com and do a lot of interviews. And there are some animated movies that if this was a normal time, we would have had the big animated films and the blockbusters. I'm not sure I would have gotten to be able to talk to some of the people of the smaller animated movies who are now getting this big attention because families need this content. Yes, there is so much out there now. What a time. What a time to be putting out a movie.
And again, coming from being a person of color, it's very exciting also to see, you know, I've always felt that, again, clearly as a filmmaker, as a person of color, that, you know, all the voices, as you say, that need to be amplified, everybody needs an opportunity to be telling stories. I love the fact that it means we're going to get more diversity, that we're going to get not just retreads, not just remakes, not just reboots, but legitimately new perspectives on arguably the same stories, you know. Many philosophers smarter than us have said, you know, there are only X amount of stories and they're all being told over and over again. Yeah, but not from everybody's perspective. And I think that's really kind of the exciting part of seeing some of the films that are in the pipeline, things that are happening, and just this time for film. Do you agree?
Yeah, completely agree. Mike Sargent is my guest right now on the Cinema Stories podcast. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Mike on Screen. I was trying to remember because we used to be on a show called Arise on Screen, which was a lot of fun. About, 5 or 6 years ago in New York City, went down, did some episodes with you for that. One of the episodes we did covered Boyhood. I was trying to remember if you were at that same screening, because I went down on a Tuesday and then returned on the Saturday to record the episode, but I went down for a Tuesday morning screening. I was trying to remember if you were at that screening or not, because otherwise, we've known each other for years, but other than that, have never seen a movie together.
Wow, you know, that's actually very true. I don't think we actually have. I'm thinking, you'd have to tell me. I couldn't even tell you when or what screening I went to see Boyhood at. Like, that's like, wow, all right, you know, thank God my life doesn't depend on it. But but no, you're right. That's interesting. We've never actually seen a film together. We've done, you know, the after talk, the criticism, but we haven't done the movie. Well, we have to see a movie together then. We have to sometime.
Yeah, figure it out. The next time I'm able to come to New York City and when the theaters open back up again, we got to make that happen. Absolutely.
I can tell you what I don't miss about movie theaters, a particular pet peeve. Now, I don't experience it as much as a film critic because I'm not generally in a theater, but I don't miss the people. But it does happen. I don't miss the people in the movie theater who can't put down their phone during the movie. I'm like, why are you here? Why are you here? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's bad. It's so bad.
I've had people sitting next to me. I've had people like down from me in a raked theater. I've just like the worst. Okay, you know, I don't know if we're getting to theater experience because you want
to go ahead. Go ahead. If you've got a cell phone story, go ahead.
Okay, this is I never forgot this. I'm sitting a row behind me. I'm you know, we're towards middle. A row behind me, a man's phone goes off. Okay, all right. It's going off in his bag. Middle of the movie. Movie's on. Loud ringing. He doesn't answer it. His girlfriend or wife answers the phone. Okay. And I'm like, you know, and again, it's so loud. This is happening. You're like, you're kind of looking back to give them that look like, hello, turn off your phone. And so she answers the phone. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She gives it to him. He gets on the phone. He's like, yeah, I'm in a movie. What the heck? You know, and then he talks and female, I'll give you a call later. I was stunned, okay? There should be some kind of etiquette or protocol. I mean, they always say to whatever. I mean, I'm so understand how people want to do concerts where they want to either not allow cell phones or make you put them in a bag or have
don't want you filming them because they just want you to experience it.
Exactly. So that's the other extension for live performances, but I really, it's a pet peeve and you can see them. They're there. It's like, there's a slight lull, you know.
The glow.
Right. No, I'm just saying there's a slight lull in the movie. It's been 8 minutes in and the characters, they got to go to their phone. So I don't miss that. That's what I'm going to say. I don't know if you have any phone stories, but that just.
One that comes to my mind that I didn't think about, didn't pop into my head until you mentioned yours just now, 2007. So this is even before Twitter. Okay. It's before Instagram, it's before Facebook was a phenomenon, all of that. I'm at Alvin and the Chipmunks. I'm sitting up in the upper section of the theater. A guy, gotta be a flip phone, but he was even playing on his flip phone, and I asked him to turn it off next to me at Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Next to you at Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yep, I can still picture that. It's funny the things we remember and the things we can still picture in our minds, even from 12 and a half, 13 years ago.
I definitely have some vivid memories of movie experiences or movie going experiences that that either were great, or in the case of that phone one, that were not so great.
What's the wild one? What's one of the wildest, unpredictable things that happened at a screening that you can remember from your many years, Mike Sargent, of movie-going experiences?
Back before, before there were movies. All right. I went to a screening. Have you ever seen The Forgotten?
No.
Okay, great. When you see The Forgotten, okay, I don't want to give out the premise too much, but it's about, this boy dies in a plane crash, and his mother's, sort of haunted by something that's going on. And there's a moment in the movie where something happens. It's like halfway through the movie. And of course, the movie now is going to kick it to a whole new gear. It's like something's going on. You don't know what's going on. Something's going on. You don't know what's going on. Then all of a sudden you find out what's going on. Everybody in the theater went, oh, like that. It was a great, great moment because we all felt the exact same thing. We were all following this movie. It's a thriller. It's got some supernatural. It's got some slight science fiction. You really don't know where this movie's going. And then when that happens, it was pretty amazing. So when you get a chance to see The Forgotten, it's from 2004, Dominic West, Julianne Moore, I recommend it. But there's a great moment in there. You'll never see it with an audience again, but it was great to see with an audience.
That's good. That's good. I was at a film festival in 2014, Film Columbia, one of the ones here in upstate New York, at the historic Crandall Theater in Chatham. And the movie was Foxcatcher.
Okay.
Steve Carell nominated for playing DuPont, Mark Ruffalo, Channing Tatum. Oscar-nominated movie. Emax Fry, one of the writers of the movie, was there. I interviewed him before that screening. There's a key moment that happens towards the end of the movie. And, I mean, if you know that story, you know what that moment's going to be. And when a certain noise goes off, I tell you, every single person in that theater, and there had to be close to 400 people, all most of them over the age of 40 or so, at least, everybody jumped out of their seats, jolted. I mean, it was just
Wow.
A single moment, I can still picture it. I can still see the jumps. I can still feel it. Everybody at once. And I was a little surprised because I sort of knew what was coming, but it still got everybody.
That's actually one of the fun things about actually seeing a horror movie, I think, with an audience. I'm not a big horror fan, but when you see a horror movie with an audience that loves it, it's like you get it. You get why they love it. They're there for the thrill. When something disgusting happens, you're like, oh, and everybody's, at the same time. So that's kind of funny. You reminded me actually of a couple others. One of them was there's been some meta moments. Okay. I went to see a movie with Mark Ruffalo. He plays a music producer. Trying to think of the name of this movie.
Oh, Beginning. Was it Begin Again with Kim and Keira Knightley?
Begin Again with, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm sitting, he's playing a music producer, and I went to see it at a screening room that sadly doesn't exist anymore in Broadway, 1619 Broadway. And it's a small screening room. And I'm sitting there, and in walks and sits next to me the biggest movie producer on the planet. And it's sort of like I was stunned, that he, Clive Davis sits next to me while I'm watching a movie about a music producer. I had to take a picture with him, but yes, I watched that movie sitting next to Clive Davis.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that kind of surreal, though?
yeah. I got to meet him at the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards one of the years. And it's so cool that the Critics' Choice Association decided to do this documentary awards in the last couple of years, because as we were just talking about with documentaries, they've had such an impact and deserve their own kind of special recognition and deserve all these films to be seen. But I guess he, because it's a movie about music, and boy, that movie had great music in it. And again, yes. He really wanted to see that then. Yeah.
Right. And again, I just, what are the odds of sitting next to Clive Owen to begin with, but then, I mean, Clive Davis to begin with, but then sitting there watching a movie about a music producer, and I kept trying not to look over and see how he would react to different things in the movie. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that movie, Begin Again, and the director that went on to do Sing Street, which yes. one of my favorite movies as well. Love that film. Love the music in that. But the end of Beginning and that final scene with that song Lost Stars, I will never forget seeing that, because I had I didn't see Beginning Again until about a month or two after it opened, and it was still playing at one of the multiplexes near me, had one or two shows a day. And so I was, I got an email from one of the PR people behind it that said, hey, if you still haven't seen it, we can comp you and let you in if it's playing near you. So I said, great. So I went to see it, and I'm watching the movie, and I'm thinking, you know, it's a good film. I like the story. I like the characters, but I've kind of seen this before. And then when Adam Levine sings Lost Stars and it plays out the way it does, it's a scene I will never forget. One of my favorite final scenes in a long time, because the song is so good. And the meaning of it is so good, and it all makes sense.
Yeah, I know those moments too, where you have an experience in the theater because of what you're watching. You know, all right. I have to ask you. I think you've told me what the movie that really made you a fan of movies. And I'm having to assume you've told that here on the show.
Well, yeah, I think I've touched on it a little bit, but the Lizzie McGuire movie was the first film I went to see in a theater. I was 4 and a half, stood up the entire time. And my eyes were glued to the screen, and I had been a fan of the show. I liked Hilary Duff watching it. You know, I was a little younger than the intended audience for Lizzie McGuire, but I still got the show. I still understood the show, really liked it. And seeing this story play out on the big screen, you know, she goes to Rome. It's this extravagant story about fun and romance and superstardom and lots of themes of friendship and togetherness. There's a lot of stuff going on in that movie, and just seeing it all and just the experience of the giant screen. And my parents looked at each other and they realized there's got to be something involved in movies and him for the rest of his life. There is something here. And that is the movie that kicked it off in May of 2003.
Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, what made me really fall in love with movies, and so I mean, I just remembered as my first like real movie experience of just being riveted. You know. By the way, I have to ask you, did you watch the Lizzie McGuire table read reunion? Did you watch that?
Oh no, I didn't catch that online. No, I heard
how could
it happen.
You not have seen that?
Yeah, it's been a crazy time, Mike. Mm-hmm. But I'll catch up on that. And I have been following the whole drama surrounding the reboot of the TV series.
Oh yeah, with the showrunner leaving and
everything. Holy cow! I mean, it is just the fact that how do you produce two episodes of a show and then people come in and say, you know what, this is too edgy and adult for Disney Plus? Did you not read the scripts? I have questions about that. There's still some murky stuff involving that I just don't get. But anyway, I've been following that. But what is the movie? What is the movie that got you?
All right, the movie that got me, okay, just to give you context here, I probably was about 8. And the movie had, you know, was... And this is in you know, the 70s. So my dad was a teacher, then, you know, assistant principal, then a principal. And he was teaching, again, I didn't know all of this, like later on. It was like, oh. But he was teaching a summer course, or was in charge of the school during the summer. And the end of the summer program back then, you used to have to rent a projector and show a movie on the screen in an auditorium, you know, right. So you'd rent like a 16 millimeter print of a movie, you know, and that's what people did. This is before VHS and everything. And he showed the movie Planet of the Apes. Now, again, I was too young when it came out and whatnot. So I had never seen it. I didn't know anything about it. And I sat there. I was just like, you know, I was blown away. I was just blown away. And I just remember just the whole idea of like, these astronauts go to another planet, you know, and it looks so alien, and the music, you know, was so weird. And then at the very end, you know, for it to be, you know, turning out to be, you know, I hope this is not a spoiler for anybody, but it turning out to be Earth. Yeah. It was just, all of it just blew my mind. And that experience forever just changed my perspective. After that, I was just, you know, movies and science fiction, I was hooked. So it was an experience for me.
And I think we reviewed one of the newer Planet of the Apes movies, On Arise, on screen. What do you think about that trilogy? I think Andy Serkis, what he did with that was amazing. How do you feel about that entire Planet of the Apes modern trilogy?
Well, okay, to contextualize it, I have to say the original Planet of the Apes, I love. It's one of my favorite films of all time. The other four, not so much, okay? I mean, I acknowledge them and that they're canon or were at the time, but none of them were really very good, except for the third film, which was actually an inverse of the original novel by Pierre Boulez. Now, that being said, the Tim Burton one was terrible. Okay, it was terrible. With the exception of having Charlton Heston as an ape saying, you know, something he said that was iconic. That was really, there was no other reason to make that movie. But what Matt did, I thought, was really good. I thought they corrected, you know, in the original series or original original five films, there's this whole concept of like a disease wiped out the cats and dogs and apes became slaves. And it was a little ridiculous. Okay. But this made sense. I thought Andy Serkis was great. I think this really worked. I would see another one if they did another one.
There have been talks about rebooting that and Matt Reeves going on to do the Batman and some other stuff, but yeah.
Wow, Matt Reeves just signed that output deal with Warner Brothers.
He did. He just signed the Warner Brothers deal. So we'll have to see what's in his future. We'll have to see what's in the future of lots of movies in terms of production and things. But when you were mentioning watching a film in school and things like that, in first grade, we had a power outage at my elementary school and they had to take all of us. There are five elementary schools in the district. They had to take everybody from our school to one of the other elementary schools nearby and put us in their giant auditorium because it was going to take too long to bring the power back on or something like that. So I remember being in this auditorium, which is normally the stages for productions and school plays and things, but they stuck a little TV in the middle because this was the age before kids could have cell phones to watch TV shows to kill some time. So they stuck a TV in the middle and they put on some movie on probably VHS. I don't remember what the movie was, unfortunately, but apparently from what I remember, the movie was not appropriate for elementary
school. Okay.
So all of a sudden, after we're there for like an hour, my principal comes on the stage and he goes, okay, we've been watching this. Now we're going to put on some of it that he mentioned the second movie. It might have been E.T. or something that was, you know, a lot safer. But I just remember that happening and people were like, they had no idea that, you know, they had no idea that this movie was not appropriate. And then only a short while later, I began at the age of 7 and a half starting to review movies to tell parents whether these movies were appropriate for children or not. So that's how it all kind of comes together.
Interesting. It was the principal like, and please kids, don't tell your parents you were watching this movie here in school.
Yeah. Something like that went down. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I have so many memorable experiences tied into the movies. This will definitely date me, but one of my most memorable experiences. Now, again, I at the point I was just old enough that my parents let me go wait. Now, this is before it was a thing, okay? But they let me wait online overnight with a group of my friends to see Return of the Jedi.
So you stood outside in front of the theater.
And it was a huge, huge line. There were people that I never forgot. There was one guy who came and he had a flattened refrigerator box. He opened up the refrigerator box. He folded it over himself and he got inside the refrigerator box. And now at that time at night, you know, there were maybe a couple dozen people out there. By the morning, it was all the way down the block. Mm-hmm. So when he finally came out at like 7:30 in the morning, like, the news was there and everything. Everybody started clapping because he came out of the box, you know. So I'll never forget. And then when we were there, then there, you know, the parents who would not let their kids wait out on the street on overnight, but friends met us there, you know, like we saved the spot online. And so we all got in, you know, to see, you know, the first people to see Return of the Jedi, and it was such an experience. Again, I remember the girl who met us there, she was crying, you know, that when like at the end, when the Force ghosts are there and everything. So that's a pretty amazing memory for me.
Wow. Yeah. When I was at San Diego Comic-Con last summer, which was a really cool experience, maybe hope to return to that when it's back in person in 2021 or whenever that may be. And I saw the lines of people just waiting to get into like the Hall H Marvel stuff and all of that. I just couldn't believe, I'd seen lines for movies before, but I'd never seen lines like this of just people who were okay to wait there 2-3 days, you know, thousands deep is just yes. Unbelievable. I don't know if I could do that. But as film critics, we get to see, and I've been in several of these lines for a lot of the preview screenings that we've gone to over the years. There will be people who wait 4 or 5 hours to get into free advanced movie screenings with their passes.
Easily. Well, you know, it's funny that you're saying, and I'd like to know your thoughts because, again, I've got some years on you. So, you know, when I used to go to conventions, you know, over 20 years ago, science fiction was not like what it is today. It's like you went to science fiction convention, you were a straight up nerd. The girls did not look like the girls at conventions today. So if you were even like remotely attractive, you were surrounded by men back in those days. But I'm curious what you think about, they just announced that San Diego Con 2020 will be completely online, or like 95% online. What's your thought about that? Do you feel that they should even do it? Do you think there's any point? I mean, has it just become a way to show clips and things? I mean, talk to me. What's your thought?
Yeah. So this last summer, 2019, was my first experience at San Diego Comic-Con. And I had a great time. It is more TV-oriented than film-oriented, which I was a little surprised by, but there were a lot of cool panels, a lot of smaller panels in different rooms with a lot of people gathered in them, and that's one of the reasons why they couldn't have the in-person one this year. I think it's fine that they're doing the online version this year because it allows anybody to watch these special clips, these special interviews, these special packages and things in advance that some people may not have the chance to go to San Diego and experience all that in person normally. So I think it's great that they're doing that. This past October was also my first full experience at New York Comic Con. I spent a day there, did some panels again, a lot more TV oriented, but the fans were into them. And I assume that they're going to do at home version of that as well. I'm all for it. I think people, it's a thing that in these unpredictable times, it's a thing that people can get excited about right now, is having the chance to see some of these things early or clips of it early. It's a positive thing right now in the world of entertainment during this time.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like San Diego Con and conventions in general have morphed into this thing that they were never really intended to be. To me, the comic book conventions were a chance to meet creators, comic book creators, sometimes, you know, film people, whatnot, to attend some panels. There were always multiple panels going on. The dealer's room, you know, back then I usually was buying stuff. Don't buy stuff anymore. And, but to me, what it's really become is sort of like a consumer version of upfronts and a series of press conferences. And, you know, in a way, yeah, it makes sense, but that's what it is. It's a series of press conferences. They're all really long commercials and behind the scenes or previews of either existing shows or shows that are coming or movies that are coming, generally genre, and it's expanded. It's not just genre. You know, there's stuff that you're like, why is this a Comic-Con? This is not sci-fi. This is not fantasy. This is straight up just like, you know, what, because this guy was in a sci-fi show 8 years ago? Anyway, so there's a lot of that to me. So I guess I can see it. I can liken it to Iron Man. I thought Iron Man was a mediocre comic, but I think he translates much better to film.
Oh, yeah.
Everett did it as a comic book. I was never a big Iron Man fan, but on film, I love the Iron Man. I love Iron Man movies. I love his portrayal. I love who he is in the comic universe. He really works on film versus Fantastic Four, of course. But I feel like it's interesting. San Diego going online, you know, they used to stream some of the press conferences. They had started doing that. And then after they were over, they would show them. Like, it's like, you had to be there to see it, but we'll show it to you a week later, you know? So the idea that everybody can essentially see it. Now, do you know, are they going to charge for that? How's that going to work?
No, it's free. It is free. Anybody can watch them. And look at what Comic-Con did. I mean, I remember when the Reels channel, this cable movie channel, which was great for movie fans. Oh, Reels channel was great. I wish it was still the way it was, right? Yes, I wish it was. They went to Comic-Con, probably 2008, because that was the year Twilight came out. And I still remember, I can still picture the stories that the reporters did with a then unknown Kristen Stewart, Taylor Lautner, Robert Pattinson, coming out, walking out onto this stage, and all of a sudden, there's tons of fans there who are cheering and screaming their names because they're in this little movie called Twilight that was about to come out that people really didn't know about. Twilight, you know, Comic-Con has launched careers, launched franchises for films like Twilight that have then brought millions of people together in these movie theaters for these event kind of films, whether it's Twilight or Hunger Games or the Harry Potter films. Comic-Con has been one of the places to do that over the last 15, 20 years.
Well, it's one of the places for fans to get close to the creators and the stars. So I think seeing it online, I think it's actually, it's something that seems counterintuitive, but I actually think it may become more popular. I think it'll not only do well, but I think it will change the face of Comic-Con.
Yeah, I mean, everything's going to change. When we're talking about, you know, when we return to movie theaters, when we return to events, sporting events, concerts, all of that, everything's going to change, at least for a semi-substantial period of time. How we interact with other people, how we sit near other people, all of that, conventions, you know, everybody's going to be a little on edge unless there's a vaccine, or even after that, I still think people are going to be a little on edge, but everything is going to change. I mean, how do you see the changes being implemented, whether it's a Comic-Con event, whether it's going to the movie theater or a show? How do you see those changes start to be implemented when we return to some of these places?
I think we'll all be following the code of the Mandalorian. Masks on. No, I'm kidding. I think, you know, it's interesting. We've, you know, this could get into a different conversation, but I think in terms of public gatherings, shared experiences, I think there's going to be always a yearning and a need for that. But what has happened, ironically, and this without getting political, but wearing a mask, actually being logical during a time of a pandemic has been politicized, where people feel that their rights are being impinged upon. So I think that there will be eventually, like what's happening, two kinds of events: safe events and then not so safe events. Take your risk, okay? You want to do it? You want to get on a plane? Get on a plane, okay? You can wear a mask, wear your gloves, okay? But, okay, that's how it is now. People who refuse to wear a mask on a plane, are they going to have flights eventually where it's not mandatory? So they'll be cheaper. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So we've actually gotten to a point where, you know, safety versus cost. People have made the decision in their mind that the plague is a hoax, or that they're young and it won't affect them. Or if you're white, it might not affect you because it's only affecting minorities. People have bought into these weird, to me, weird. And to me, I like, that doesn't make any sense. It's a Spock that's illogical. But I think what's going to happen is the same thing that has also happened, I think, with the movie audience. This pandemic has amplified so many things. We were already seeing how the movie studios had cannibalized their own viewing audience by releasing films so quickly, okay? And Netflix was gaining power and dominance in the industry, and all the old school institutions, the Oscars and theater owners, didn't want to play Netflix films and didn't want to acknowledge Netflix films. And now everybody's got streaming stuff. Okay. Everybody's got stuff streaming. They've had to change the rules. So I think we will create separate cultures within our culture for how you want to experience things. I think there are people who never go to the movies anymore. They only wait till it comes because they know in 2 months, no matter how big the film is, 2 months later, it's going to be available. Okay. And I think day and date streaming, I think what will happen, there will be people. I think it was, they tried it. It didn't quite work, but I think there will be people who would rather sit at home and there are people who would rather go to the movies. And I think a movie will come out and you may have that window, but I think people are conditioned now to not have to go to the movie theaters. Clearly, movie theaters are going to have to be, they're going to either have to conglomerate, you know, where Amazon is going to have to buy movie theaters, which is ironic because their logo is a movie theater. But, you know, Netflix did it in the city with the Paris, you know, so
right.
I think it's going to have to be, I think content providers are going to have to provide their own venues, just like they have, you know, different platforms to watch it. You can watch it on your phone, you can watch it on your iPad, you can watch it on your TV, you could watch it at the drive-in, you could watch it. I just think that that's what's going to happen. Does that make any sense what I'm going?
It does. I do believe that there are people who, when this is over, there will still be people who say, I'm not going to bother going to the theater. Older people may just want to stay at home. Older people used to be a key demographic. That's 65, 70 plus crowd. They'd go to the independent theater. They'd go to the art house theater. They'd support the movies through that way. That was their outlet. That was their place. I think that percentage is going to get smaller.
I don't know if those theaters will be able to survive.
Yeah, those theaters may not be able to survive, which is too bad. But yeah, I think they will wait. I mean, I just posted this recently on my Twitter that Birds of Prey opened February 6th. It's going to be on HBO August 15th. We've been seeing the window of theater to DVD to pay-per-view to VOD to premium channel to cable, you know, shrink significantly over the last several years. And now we're at this point where a movie can be in theaters one day, and in 6 months, it will be on HBO. I mean, It is. I think the waiting thing you're talking about is true, that some people will just say, you know what, it's at Redbox for $1.50 in a couple months. I'm just going to wait with the kids and the family. But that ability with a streaming service like a Disney Plus or an Apple or something like that to have something instant, people will also latch on to. So it's a tricky little balance. But yes, different movie strategies from the different studios may help or hurt them. Going the theatrical route may end up hurting a film or a studio.
We will be talking about how many films will crash and burn in the theaters. We'll be talking about it because of exactly what you're saying. I think you're absolutely right. And I think just to add to that, I also think when you've trained the consumer inadvertently to expect things in a certain way, you say 6 months, I think you're being generous. Okay. I've watched so many films come out. And especially if it didn't make, you know, there's an interest to, okay, we didn't make money, release in the theaters, release it next quarter, because we need to show profit in the next quarter. So I think that, you know, money clearly is show business after all. I think we're moving closer to the video game model. A video game can come out and make $1 billion in 3 days. A movie will take that 6 months to do that, okay, as it expands to different markets and then you're going to worry about piracy and blah, 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 blah. But if it is a streaming, if it is something that you can make all that money in that first quarter by releasing it on every platform, like a month, that's what I see happening. Because I agree with you, there are people who are just not going to go for that experience anymore. It's just not worth it. It's not, I mean, you have to drive, you have to park, you have to then get popcorn. It's a whole big ordeal, especially if you have kids.
And the safety factors of it too.
And the other thing that's happened, okay, we cannot dismiss, if you tried over the last 4 months to buy a big screen TV, you probably were having to wait because they were back ordered, because everybody's been ordering big screen TVs. It's huge
to get the film experience in your home during this time.
Absolutely.
Yes. So yes, and I agree with you that we've become conditioned to just stay at home and watch movies now for 4 months, heading into month number 5 of all of this. And to ask people to drive, I mean, it doesn't take a lot to drive to a theater if it's within, you know, 20 minutes of where you live. I've got one that's literally 5 minutes from me, a multiplex, and I love just, you know, heading down there and I could see a movie and come back home. But taking a trip to the movies for some people was always more of a, you know, once a month event. Or once a year kind of event thing. Yes, an event thing. And now they're not even going to want to take part in the event.
No, it'll have to be something huge to want to do that. I think it will eventually, you know, just like you kind of condition a habit out of somebody, you know, I think it'll just become more of an event. It'll have to be quite a bit more time will have to go by before people. Why take the risk? If you know that it's going to cost you money, time, effort, traveling there, back and forth, getting dressed, all this stuff to go enjoy something that you could versus go to your nice home theater setup. Okay, pop on the movie, put on the popcorn, and you're good to go. Okay, you've saved yourself money, aggravation, time, dealing with people. Dealing with people, let me just say, that's a factor when you go out. It's like
people are unpredictable. And yeah, I mean, I've missed going to the theaters, but at the same time, I don't miss the trailers. I don't miss people on their cell phones. I don't miss people talking. I don't miss loud chewing of popcorn. I don't miss a lot of things. I miss walking in. I miss seeing certain people. I miss seeing the posters and the vibe of it. But there are nice things about staying at home and watching the movie your way, how you want to do it with minimal distractions.
There it is. Now, again, it depends on the film. And depends on, like, you know, there are going to be movies, obviously, like Tenet. Clearly, that's something, like, I want to see. I would rather see it on the big screen, okay? But if I can't, I mean, I definitely think event filmmaking is going to take a hit because I don't know they're going to be able to recoup that money. If the movie theaters are hurting so bad, what's Disney going to do? Disney was already getting, let's just, you know, in the view of the movie theaters, and I'm not taking sides here, of the theater chains, getting greedy by asking for more of a percentage with the films. You know,
they've been doing that for drive-ins as well. Yes. And I've been working with the drive-ins for years, and they ask a hefty 60 to 70% of what the drive-ins make on a certain Disney movie Disney wants.
There it is. Now, they can do that because they're Disney, but if these theater companies are theater chains are hurting now and they don't know what kind of return they're going to get, you know, and you have to give 60% of it and Disney wants more than 60, then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I think that you're either going to have to go with, and this will be ironic, like if Netflix will give you a much better deal for their movie to play there, you know, so it's going to be interesting how it all plays out.
Yes, it is. I've never had a problem with watching a big movie at home. Maybe it's because we get screeners during award season for Critics' Choice and some of the bigger movies like 1917 I watched in my house. You know, and I still enjoyed it thoroughly watching it on my TV in my living room. I've never had that issue. I've been seeing some reviews come out of the new Tom Hanks movie, Greyhound, which is on Apple TV Plus right now, which I recommend. And people are like, oh, it should have been better. It would have been more effective on a big screen. Just judge the movie for what it is. This is the new norm. You're watching these movies at home. Just look at the movie for what it is and try to experience it and visualize that and put yourself in it that way. So hopefully we won't have too much more of that. But one of the last things I want to ask you, Mike, before we wrap up this episode of the Cinema Stories podcast, you know, Tenet has been on people's minds since this whole thing began, and it became the movie that everybody was looking forward to, the movie that was going to save us all once theaters could reopen. As of this recording, it's opening Wednesday, August 12th. It may have gotten delayed by the time you're listening to this right now. Does Tenet come out in some way before the end of the calendar year? Does it wait to 2021 to sneak in for Oscar time in January or February? If you had to make the prediction right now and put money on it, when does Tenet open?
If I had to make the prediction, I think it would be foolish for Tenet to open any time before September, October, in my opinion. I think that they, at a certain point, they're going to realize the only hope we have is potentially Thanksgiving, okay? Because what's happening right now is we are back where we were in the end of March, okay? Mm-hmm. When we weren't prepared all March because, let's just say, a lack of leadership okay, about, you know, they were like, don't wear a mask. What do you need a mask for? That's ridiculous. Only if you're sick. That was okay. So nobody wore a mask. Everybody got sick. So then we all had to stay in. Everything dropped. But as soon as they started reopening, and as soon as it became politicized, and people are doing foolish things, and it had nothing to do, as statistics told us, with the ironically, the Black Lives Matter marches. Those folks were smart. Mm. You see, most of them, they're wearing masks.
They were.
So, but it's been the other areas and the other type of protests. Let's just say that those who bought into a different narrative that aren't wearing masks. So, I think we're in for a rough 2 months, and I think it would be folly to release a film next month. So I think they're going to have to wait till Christmas, you know, a Thanksgiving season. I think coming into the fall, I'd say October.
Yeah.
What's your prediction?
I don't disagree with that. It's such an unpredictable, fluid time that, you know, anything can happen at any moment. Right now, what do we got? We got the James Bond, No Time to Die. They were the first to say, let's go right to Thanksgiving and see what happens. And they probably made the right call by doing that and then forcing others to make their moves. I'd like to see No Time to Die still come out in Thanksgiving to kind of say, hey, we were right. I think that'd be cool. I could see Tenet at Christmas. I could see Tenet sneaking in before the new Oscars deadline at the end of February. I mean, you know, anything at this point just to get it in the deadline. It just depends on how much Warner Brothers really wants that theatrical experience and wants that money and wants the Oscars and everything. But I could see Tenet Christmas. I could see that.
Well, I don't think it's completely up to Warner Brothers. I think part of that has to do with the director wants it to be a theatrical experience. I think that if it was up to them, I think there's going to be a point where they need to do like what Disney. I mean, Disney got a 79% spike in downloads when they released Hamilton. And same thing with Trolls. And I think there are going to be event streamings or streaming events that will increase viewership and subscriptions and all that. And I think that that's going to happen. And I think at the same time, that's how they're going to have to make money. I mean, think about how many things we rely on that have changed to the subscription model. So many things, TV, radio, everything's become a subscription model. Everything's a la carte. And so as a result, that's what we're used to. Right now, I can't see, you know, difficult to see future always changing. So I had to throw that in there. So I think you're right. I think nothing's going to happen for real till close to Thanksgiving.
One of the last things I want to say here, and one of the reasons why I've been doing this Cinema Stories podcast, is to not only bring on friends and colleagues like you to tell great stories and the perspective, which is so nice, but it's also we've been following what's happening with the movie theaters and how they've been opening up in certain parts of the country and not in others, and the resurgence of drive-ins and things like that. Here in the state of New York, which we are both in, you're in New York City, I'm in Albany. Governor Cuomo has been on our TV almost every day giving us updates on what's been happening. He thankfully opened the drive-in theaters, allowed them to have a good season so far in the middle of May, because he understands that, you know, these businesses need to exist and that families and people should see movies on the big screen at a drive-in during this period of time. As of this recording, the state of New York has still not allowed any indoor movie theaters to open. Hopefully that will change soon, but as we've been looking at other parts of the country, I think Cuomo and what's been happening in New York, the phase openings and the steadiness of that has actually been very smart, because we're doing okay now as opposed to where things were at 4 months ago, and we are still waiting for the movie theaters, but I think the movie theaters being reopened is hopefully just around the corner for the state of New York. We will have to see, but I think it's been a smart play right now, and hopefully just the timing of New York theaters being reopened and the timing of certain movies coming out will collide. If not, we'll just adjust to everything as much as we can.
Well, here's the other thing I think is a factor. You know, they've been talking about this wave of evictions. They've been talking about, you know, there are they're allowing certain things to open up. There are a lot of businesses that have gone out, you know, they're kind of cut back on this additional 600 or whatever it is that giving people unemployment at the end of July. So I don't know that people, you know, movie tickets have also become really expensive.
They have.
I don't think people are going to want to go and spend $15 a person to go see a movie. That's $30. I think there's, you know, when the economy is uncertain and people are holding on to their money, I can't see that's a risk I just don't see people taking. I just don't see it being, let's put it this way, I don't see enough people taking that risk for it to be a financial win for the movie theaters.
Yeah.
That's just my take on it.
I see where you're coming from. And I hope that you and I can return to movie theaters, to indoor movie theaters very soon. I hope we can have that theatrical experience again. But it's a new world. It's a different world. A lot of things are changing when it comes to the indoor theatrical movie experience. And it will continue to change once we hopefully eventually return to them. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it happens. But I'm okay if we have to wait just a little bit longer, because hopefully there's some good things on the other side.
All right. Well, I have to ask, can I ask you one question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. What's your favorite? Now, again, we don't get to go to a lot of premieres, but we've all gone to some premieres.
Mm.
What was your favorite premiere experience or most memorable?
Well, so you're talking like, you know, the red carpets.
The red carpet, the whole thing. Stars are there. Stars are there watching it with you.
Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, I've done a few of those. I know you've done some of the ones associated with the Critics' Choice Awards in the past.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've done that, but I've done, yeah, periodically I've done, you know.
I've covered some of those red carpets still without even going into the movie. What's popping in my head now is the last Harry Potter movie, which I covered the red carpet for and the anticipation surrounding that. And John Carter, one of the biggest busts of Disney of all time. I covered that red carpet and the stars were there and other random people were there. Helen Mirren was there. So I remember doing those and those were fun. Yeah. But I mean, you know, those nights were fun because of the anticipation, because people were ready to go in and see those movies. Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot was the film with Joaquin Phoenix that came out in 2018 through Amazon. I was at the Arclight that night, and then what we discovered is they had two rooms. They had the room for the press and some audience, and then they had the room for the celebs and some of their friends to go in. So they actually had two separate rooms to show the movie. And I remember Joaquin came in and Rooney Mara came in and Jack Black came in to intro that for us before the movie started. So that was a fun night. Okay. But yeah, a lot of people don't realize that sometimes you do get to sit in the same room as the celebs for these movies, but sometimes you don't.
That's okay. All right. I've definitely had quite a number of memorable premiere experiences. I could tell you three quick ones. All right. The first one was one of my first premieres I ever went to. I went to the premiere of The Abyss, okay, at Radio City Music Hall.
One of the coolest places.
Yes, it was mind-blowing. So that was a great experience. Two, I went to, and this was my... I'm a huge Sean Connery fan, and I'm so sad he doesn't make movies anymore. But I went to the premiere of Finding Forrester, and I'll never forget, I'm standing in the lobby, and, you know, this is before the movie starts, and red carpet is now over, and people are filling in the theater now, and, you know, there's not much of a line at the concessions, because it's like free concessions or whatever. And I'm standing, and then Sean Connery walks in, and he just walks in. Nobody's around and no paparazzi. And he just walks in and he's walking to the theater. And I was standing near the entrance to the theater and he looks at me and he goes, "How's your going?" And it was like, Sean Connery knew I existed for that 30 seconds, you know? So that was fun. And, you know, I probably say those are probably my top two fun. I mean, I've had, you know, great after parties I've gone to, you know.
And all the Critics' Choice Award shows. Yeah, that's where a lot of the, you know, celeb stuff. Yeah.
That's fun. But sitting in a premiere is a very specific experience, too. I do remember I went to see, you know, my two favorite theaters are no longer here. The Ziegfeld and the Los Astor Plaza. Those are huge theaters in New York City. They're both gone. But I do remember going to see a screening. Actually, think about it now. It's at the Lincoln Square, which is the last big theater. They have an IMAX screen. And it's a real IMAX, not like some of these bogus IMAX that they call it IMAX, and it's not IMAX. And I went to see this movie that Tom Cruise was in with science fiction film, Oblivion.
Oh, okay, the one with Morgan Freeman, okay.
Wait, was it Oblivion? Wait, which was the one that the director of... no, the one where he kept Live, Die, Repeat...
Oh, Edge of Tomorrow, one of my favorites. Him and Emily Blunt, yes.
Yes, so he and Emily Blunt, and I was sitting close to the front, and Tom Cruise came in, and the director came in, and that was kind of fun. And then, Will Smith was in the audience. And I remember going to see, like, a Will Smith movie, and Tom Cruise was in the audience. So, like, they kind of go to each other's premieres, and that's kind of cool.
Huh, I didn't know that. Okay, Will and Tom, two of the biggest movie stars.
They go to each other's premieres, and you're like, what? Yeah, like, he made time. So that was kind of fun.
Man, wow. I love these stories. I always love chatting with you. We do it every week on the Too Fast, Two Films podcast, TooFastTwoFilms.com. And you've been doing so many great things on WBAI radio. I went on your night shift show, and that was a different kind of experience, Mike. Yes, some of the stuff you're talking about on that, whoa.
All right, well, I have to give a shout out for my new podcast. I do a podcast now. It just started with Jack Rico. It's called Brown and Black, and we talk about race and pop culture. So we don't just talk about movies.
Okay, check that out. But yeah, night shift, that was a good time. That was fun. And listening to some of the themes of what's happening out there and how it all relates to life and society and entertainment. Yes. And
how life is like science fiction. Okay, one last question. I don't know if you're a fan because he just passed. Are you a fan of Ennio Morricone, and does he have a favorite score for you?
Right. He just passed away, won the Oscar for Hateful Eight a few years ago. Cinema Paradiso is actually my father's favorite film.
Great score.
And I remember watching that for the first time about close to 10 years ago, probably, maybe a little sooner than that. But I know I can understand why it's his favorite film, and I love the movie as well. It is powerful. If you've never seen Cinema Paradiso and you're a movie fan, get on it because it is quite good. So, yeah, that's one that stands out in my mind, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Mike Sargent. Follow him on Twitter at Mike on Screen. He's on Instagram as well. WBAI Radio, Night Shift Mondays at 10, Real World Fridays at 6:30. And a member of the Critics' Choice Association. We'll be voting soon-ish for the various award shows that are part of the Critics' Choice Awards. And again, Too Fast, Two Films. We'll be back with two new releases every single week that you can watch at home until we can return to indoor movie theaters. Mike, thank you so much for being on this episode of the Cinema Stories podcast.
Thank you. And that was not so fast.
That was not so fast. You're absolutely right about that. That's part of our tagline for Too Fast, Two Films. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this Cinema Stories podcast series. This officially wraps it up. This was always meant to be a 6-episode summer event podcast series. I want to thank all my guests over the past 6 episodes for being on. Jeffrey K. Howard, the Vegas film critic, Jason Black, who's in the Critics Choice Association, Jim Dixon, who's part of the Online Film Critics Society, good friend and colleague Amy Biancoli, Rick Marshall from Digital Trends, and Mike Sargent here. Thank you all for being on the podcast. It was so much fun learning your movie theater experience story, sharing mine with you, and to all of you for listening, thank you. Fingers crossed on these movie theaters opening back up. I hope we get that experience again very soon. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at LCJReviews, Instagram at LightsCamJackson. The website is lights-camera-jackson.com. And for all of these episodes of the Cinema Stories podcast, as well as my LCJ Q&A podcast and the good old Back to You podcast about that fantastic Fox sitcom, you can go to lcj.podbean.com, also available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Thank you for listening to Cinema Stories.